I'm Montse Alvarado, tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Keeping the Faith. Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa celebrates Sunday Mass in Gaza, the message he had for the faithful after their church was attacked, pushing for peace. Pope Leo XIV is also making moves, who he spoke with today about the war between Hamas and Israel. A milestone for President Trump. His second term, what stands out after 6 months in office. Plus, cause for concern. Analysis of newly released data on the number of abortions in parts of Europe. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Lawrence of Brindisi. We begin tonight with the desperate situation in Gaza. Palestinians are facing impossible decisions, risking their lives for food or dying of starvation. The United Kingdom and 27 nations demanded an end to the war today, with Pope Leo adding his voice to their call. This morning, Israeli troops pushed into the city of Deir al-Bala. It was the only Gaza city that had not seen major ground operations since the start of the war. Several aid groups are based there, and tens of thousands of people have sought refuge there as well. The moves come amid reports of Israeli troops firing on a crowd of Palestinians seeking humanitarian aid over the weekend. Today, Pope Leo spoke with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. The Vatican says the Holy Father repeated his appeal for humanitarian laws to be fully respected. He also emphasized the urgent need to assist the most vulnerable. This comes just a few days after the Holy Family Church was hit by a shell from a tank, killing three and injuring several others. It's the only Catholic church in Gaza. And at his weekly Angelus, Pope Leo reached out to all the faithful in the region.
To our beloved Middle Eastern Christians, I say, I deeply sympathize with your feeling that you can do little in the face of this grave situation. You are in the heart of the Pope and of the whole Church.
Meanwhile, in a show of resilience, faith, and trust in our Lord, parishioners at the Holy Family Church gathered to celebrate Sunday Mass. The celebrant was the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem himself, Cardinal Pier Battista Pizzaballa. His Eminence spent the entire weekend in Gaza praying and speaking with the faithful. He closed out his homily with an exhortation saying, quote, "Remain united in Jesus. All the world is looking at you. Remain the light here in Gaza, not just for you in Gaza, but for all of us. May the Lord bless all of you." For more, let's discuss this with Trevor Keck. He's the head of policy at the International Committee of the Red Cross. Trevor, it's good to talk to you. Your organization does work in Deir al-Bala. Have you heard anything from them since Israel launched its first ground assault there?
Thanks for having me, Monse. Just what you talked about a minute ago about the hostilities. I haven't heard anything yet on the humanitarian observations, but I think they're still gathering this information.
How usual it is to have these interactions under the last 2 years of war? Is this something that is normal to have this kind of aggression from the IDF?
Well, of course, yeah. There's been a conflict in Gaza, you know, since October 7th, obviously. So they've been moving around different parts of Gaza, and of course, Hamas has also been fighting them in different parts of Gaza. So it's not terribly unusual. They are moving their forces around to fight Hamas, obviously.
The Red Cross Field Hospital is near two of the aid distribution sites. Has any of the staff witnessed the Israeli military firing at people when aid has arrived?
So our teams are not at the aid distribution sites directly. We have our key operation in Gaza is our Red Cross Field Hospital, which has 60 beds is treating literally thousands of people since May 27th, since these aid distribution sites started. They've taken in 3,400 patients in about a month, which is more, and we've activated our mass casualty protocol where the hospital has basically been overwhelmed with influx of patients. We've activated that more times in the last month than in the last year. And many of the people that are seeking medical assistance at our hospital are telling us that they are seeking seeking food at these aid distribution sites.
The Hamas run. The Hamas run health ministry in Gaza is reporting that in the last 24 hours, 19 Palestinians have died from hunger. I just want to lean into that, as you were saying, in terms of the food insecurity issues. How bad is that?
So I don't have the statistics. What we can say is our medical staff at our field hospital see people, treat people every day that look malnourished. So that's a fact. I think the challenge for viewers to know is that, there's a couple of trends that have led to this point. If you recall, there was a ceasefire from January to early March. And during that time, there was a surge of aid, including food aid. And then there was blockade for about 10 weeks. And then aid started to trickle in May. And what the challenge has been is that there was a level of desperation that needed to be met with large amounts of trucks coming in with food aid, with medical supplies, with everything you need to live your life. Keeping in mind that Gaza has basically been destroyed in terms of the urban infrastructure, sanitation, water infrastructure. And so there wasn't that surge in assistance. And so now what's happening is there's a limited amount of food assistance and other humanitarian supplies, and people are desperate. People are desperate for food. And unfortunately, there isn't enough because there's restriction. And what needs to happen is a surge in assistance into Gaza to meet that level of desperation.
Well, we'll be sharing these stories and, of course, any opportunity to help with our audience. Thank you so much for being with us.
All right. Thank you.
President Donald Trump marks 6 months in office by listing what he sees as his biggest accomplishments. But Democrats rally against him, calling for a repeal of his big, beautiful bill. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen, good to see you.
Monse, good evening to you. President Trump calls it 6 months of winning and stacking up wins. But tonight, Catholic bishops see more of a mixed bag.
President Donald Trump makes history with a wave of executive orders and a long battle to pass his agenda into law, wrapped into the one big beautiful bill.
And of course, the great big beautiful, I added the word great, the great big beautiful bill, that was something that nobody thought possible. There really is a lot of things for everyone. And when we get the word out how great that is for every single person in this country, virtually.
Pro-life groups celebrated the law's push to halt taxpayer funding for abortion for 1 year, although Planned Parenthood immediately challenged that provision in court. The White House also says the law delivers the largest tax cut in American history and terminates benefits for at least 1.4 million illegal immigrants who were gaming the system. Border crossings have dropped to historic lows.
You look at our southern border, look at the numbers. Just last month, zero illegal aliens were released into our country.
But Catholic bishops say the new law fails to protect families and children by promoting an enforcement-only approach to immigration. And one immigration attorney tore into the president on birthright citizenship.
Americans are recoiling to the tune of 60, almost 60% when it comes to opposing the president's attempt to take away birthright citizenship, which is enshrined in the Constitution.
The White House also reports the U.S. economy has now added a net of 671,000 jobs since January. Inflation is down too, with the price of eggs and gas falling. But one lawmaker is critical of the president's promises.
By the way, another host of promises not kept, whether he promised he was bringing prices down, he has not promised he would keep people on Medicaid, they're getting kicked off.
The economy has shown resilience despite President Trump's tariff wars.
We've got trade deals coming out of our ears, right? We got so many trade deals, they're all calling.
And overseas, the president praises the U.S. military strike against Iran's nuclear program. The White House adds, President Trump secured ceasefires between India and Pakistan and Israel and Iran, a peace agreement between Rwanda and the Democratic Republic of Congo, and a pathway to stability for Syria. But the president so far has failed to end the fighting in Gaza and Ukraine.
Now, looking ahead, tomorrow President Trump welcomes Ferdinand Marcos Jr. to the White House. He, of course, is the president of the Philippines. Trade will be one item on the agenda ahead of that August 1st deadline. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
If you're an Uber or Lyft driver, listen up. A group of Republican senators are pushing legislation that would make it easier for you and other independent workers to get benefits like health care. It's the latest move in the fight over those who work in the gig economy. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us in the studio with more. Eric, it's great to have you here.
Hey, great to be here, Monse. Republican Senator Bill Cassidy is leading the charge to provide portable benefits to some 27 million gig workers, and that number is growing. These are jobs like DoorDash, Grubhub, and Instacart, to name a few. It would allow them access to benefits regardless of their specific employer or job. Senator Cassidy, who chairs the Labor Committee, tells me it's a win-win for businesses and workers.
We do that by giving a safe harbor to the business. You can contribute to these benefits, but it doesn't mess up the freedom that the independent contractor has to go where she or he wishes to go, to work when they want to work. All the things why they want to be an independent contractor doesn't mess with that, but it does let them provide those benefits.
The bill would allow companies to voluntarily offer benefits without taking on employment liability, such as workers' compensation and unemployment. Workers would also be allowed to take their benefits from job to job. Senator Kevin Cramer and others like the idea, saying with high health care costs, workers should have flexibility.
We don't ever want to put up a roadblock to the entrepreneur, to the innovator, because that's always been the economic advantage of the United States, is to be the country that actually facilitates innovation.
There needs to be a look at ensuring that people can get coverage across the country. If someone doesn't have coverage, they go to an emergency room, and those bills aren't paid, they don't disappear. They go somewhere else, and they get added to the cost of care for everyone else.
If there are more creative ways to compensate them, that seems like a good idea. More options for workers to, you know, structure their remuneration, their pay the way they want, and give them more freedom.
But others are saying not so fast and question who's going to pay for it all.
If people want health insurance, there are a multitude of ways right now for them to access it. I'm not going to support a brand new program to provide more free health insurance to yet another segment of our population.
Senator Cassidy tells me the idea is picking up steam.
Blue and red states, they are looking at this new way that people work and saying, wait a second, 100-year-old laws that we now operate under just don't work today. Let's update them. Let's give the freedom. Let's give the ability to have the benefits. Let's step into the next century.
And by the way, some states have already started to pass laws that would allow companies to offer portable benefits to independent workers. Utah, for instance, is the first to do so, and they did so in 2023. Senator Cassidy hopes Republican leadership will bring up this bill to a vote on the floor very soon. Monse, back to you.
Thanks so much, Eric. Well, we have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including bad news for pro-lifers. Why have abortion numbers increased in parts of Europe? We'll explain. And a fire engulfs a ferry carrying hundreds of people in Indonesia. Welcome back. Search and rescue efforts are underway off the coast of Indonesia's Sulawesi Island after a ferry caught fire. In the chaotic moments after the blaze broke out, passengers were seen jumping into the sea. It happened yesterday as the ferry was making its regular journey between two ports. Officials say 575 people were rescued. Sadly, three people died and two are missing. The cause of the fire is under investigation. Now to Bangladesh, where an Air Force training jet crashed into a school campus. It happened in Dhaka, the country's capital. At least 20 people are confirmed dead. Military officials say the aircraft experienced a technical malfunction moments after takeoff, but the pilot tried to divert the plane to a less populated location. The cause of the accident is under investigation. Despite losing the ruling coalition in Japan's upper house, the prime minister insists he will remain in office. This marks the first time since 1955 that the Liberal Democratic Party does not have a majority in at least one chamber of the legislature. Many voters cited their concerns over inflation, immigration, and wages as the issues that drove them to the polls. This further weakens Prime Minister Shigeru Ueshiba's position ahead of the August 1st deadline to reach an agreement with the U.S. over tariffs. Multiple foreign countries released their abortion data this month, and the news is not good for pro-lifers. In Ireland, the number of abortions last year rose by nearly 8%. And in England and Wales, according to the most recent data, abortions increased by more than 13% from 2021 to 2022. For more, we turn to Michael New, assistant professor of practice at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America and a senior associate scholar at the pro-life Charlotte Loggia Institute. Michael, the new numbers on the rise in abortions in Ireland, England, and Wales, did this surprise you?
No, it didn't. One thing we know from a lot of research is that abortion rates are impacted by public policy. And tragically, Ireland legalized abortion in 2019, and it's kind of not surprising that since then, abortions have gone up by about 40% in Ireland. We know we legalize abortion, numbers go up. That's happened in Ireland. In England and Wales, they make chemical abortions a lot more accessible. During the COVID-19 pandemic, they allowed women to get these chemical abortion drugs without any in-person visits. So it's really not surprising that abortions went up by about 13% in 2022. You make chemical abortions easier to get. Again, abortion rates go up.
Well, let's take a look at that devastating loss from Ireland, and specifically, that trend began after that referendum overturned a ban on abortion. Can you put this into perspective for us culturally? Is it that more people are interested in abortion? Do you have people flying into Ireland to procure these deadly procedures?
Well, Ireland for a long time had one of the strongest pro-life laws in kind of all of Europe. I mean, they had the Eighth Amendment that really did provide very solid legal protection for preborn children. Sadly, the Eighth Amendment was repealed by a public referendum in 2018. I think what you just see happening in Ireland is the country has become a lot more secular. Many people are nominally Catholic, but mass attendance is way down. Pro-lifers in that referendum did well amongst those who attend church or mass frequently. Among infrequent mass attendees, they voted almost in favor, overwhelmingly, to vote in favor of legal abortion. So, again, you see Ireland becoming more secular. That's kind of why abortion policy is more permissive, and that's why you see more abortions.
What can you tell us about the change then in England and Wales? You mentioned it had something to do with the coronavirus pandemic. Can you double-click into that for us and explain what that trend really means?
Sure. That England and Wales, like a lot of countries, have just made it easier to obtain chemical abortions. Back, I guess, in 2018, they reduced the number of visits that one needed for a chemical abortion from 2 to 1. And then during the COVID pandemic, like a lot of other countries, they made it possible for women to obtain these chemical abortion pills by telehealth. So that meant that women didn't actually have to have an in-person meeting with a medical professional. They could just have an online meeting and get these pills through the mail. And in England and Wales, like the United States, we see abortion numbers go up. I mean, if you don't have to have an in-person visit, that reduces the cost and makes the abortion more accessible. And it really is not surprising that abortion rates did go up in both England and Wales.
Is there any good news then for pro-lifers in the UK or in Europe?
I would just say that, we see from the United States that, long-term progress can be made getting abortion numbers down. In the United States, after Roe v. Wade, abortion numbers spiked up. But between 1980 and 2017, we cut the abortion rate in half in this country. And that doesn't get that much attention. So, we're in this for the long haul. There's going to be setbacks, disappointments, aggravations. But I think you can see in the U.S. that, it is possible to build a culture of life. It is possible to get abortion numbers down. So I would never encourage despair. I think there's always things you can do to build a culture of life.
A grateful, hopeful message. Thank you so much. Michael New, assistant professor of practice at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America and senior associate scholar at the Pro-Life Charlotte Loggia Institute. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, look up in the sky. What Pope Leo XIV says about the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing. marks 1 year since the U.S. Bishops' initiative to reignite belief in the real presence of Jesus Christ in the Eucharist, the National Eucharistic Congress, wrapped up in Indianapolis, Indiana. It drew in tens of thousands of Catholic faithful from across the country in an effort to foster a love and devotion to the Eucharist. Today, we spoke with Jason Shanks, president of the National Eucharistic Congress, about the effect it has had and what happens next.
We know of a lot of conversions. We know of a lot of hearts moved. We know early indicators or early signs that this revival that the bishops called for is bearing fruit. So of course we would love to do something in 2033, but one of the things that happened almost a year ago is when we asked those in the stadium, would you like to do it sooner? Everybody jumped to their feet and was super excited to do this again, to have this sort of amazing grace-filled moment again. And so we are looking to do it sooner. We're looking at the year 2029. So God willing, with approvals from the bishops, we'll get that done.
If you want to continue in the footsteps of the Eucharistic Revival, you can become a Eucharistic missionary. Download the MANA app or visit eucharisticrevival.org/become for more information. A slight change of itinerary for Pope Leo XIV. The Holy Father is set to return to the Vatican on Tuesday from his time at the papal summer residence of Castel Gandolfo. Pope Leo originally was set to return yesterday. EWTN Vatican News correspondent Valentina Di Donato has more.
In the midst of the warm weather of July, Pope Leo XIV reflects on the season during his Mass at the Cathedral of Albano, marking his third Sunday at the papal summer residence.
Facciamone l'occasione.
Let us make summer an opportunity to care for others, to get to know each other, and to offer advice and a listening ear. For these are expressions of love, and that is something we all need. Let us do so with courage. In this way, through solidarity, in the sharing of faith and life, we will help to promote a culture of peace, helping those around us to overcome divisions and hostility, and to build communion between individuals, peoples, and religions.
Tra i popoli, tra le religioni.
The cathedral is just 2 kilometers from Castel Gandolfo, a place that holds a special significance to Pope Leo. When he was still Cardinal Prevost, the late Pope Francis assigned him as Cardinal Bishop of Albano. Prevost was to take possession of the Cathedral of San Pancrazio in Albano this past May during the feast day of the city's patron saint. But those plans changed when Cardinal Prevost became Pope Leo XIV.
As you know, I was supposed to arrive on May the 12th, but the Holy Spirit had other plans. Still, I'm truly happy to be here, and with this sense of fraternity and Christian joy, I greet all of you present.
After the Sunday Angelus, Pope Leo also mourned the 3 Palestinians killed in an attack last week on the Holy Family Catholic Parish in Gaza City.
Prego per le vittime.
I pray for the victims, Saad Isa Kostandi Salameh, Fumia Isa Latif Ayad, Naiwa Ibrahim Latif Abu Daoud, and I'm particularly close to their families and to all the parishioners. Sadly, this act adds to the continuous military attacks against the civilian population and places of worship in Gaza.
In the late afternoon of Sunday, Pope Leo paid a visit to the Vatican Observatory for the 56th anniversary of the historic landing of Apollo 11 on the moon. He spoke with astronaut Buzz Aldrin, who was on the mission to space and the second man to walk on the moon. The pair reflected on the extraordinary achievement, the mystery of creation in all its greatness and fragility. In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
Today is the optional feast of St. Lawrence of Brindisi, a Capuchin friar and doctor of the church who is said to have memorized the entire Bible. St. Lawrence was fluent in many languages, including Hebrew. He also was a great preacher and was tasked with combating the spread of Protestantism. He's credited with saying, "The Word of God is a light to the mind and a fire to the will. It enables man to know God and love him." St. Lawrence of Brindisi, pray for us. And finally tonight, some big news from our EWTN family. EWTN's chairman and CEO Michael Warsaw announced a new organizational structure for the Eternal Word television network meant to enhance EWTN's faithfulness to its mission in the digital landscape and increase our global impact. EWTN will now align its operations around two groundbreaking divisions, EWTN Studios and EWTN Digital. Each is part of a bold new structure to expand the network's global mission. And appointed to lead these two divisions are one veteran of the network and an up-and-coming leader who came to EWTN after a global talent search. Peter Gagnon has been named president of EWTN Studios. He is a longtime EWTN leader with over 32 years at the network and one of the few remaining team members that worked with Mother Angelica. And Sean Graber will lead EWTN Digital. He joined our family last year after a global search. EWTN Digital will build the platforms to distribute EWTN Studios content and that of other aligned creative partners. Congratulations to them both and to the EWTN family. You can learn more about this big change at the Catholic News Agency online and in the next print edition of the National Catholic Register. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.